Hello, everyone, and welcome to One Control Port Podcast, episode 336. I'm Benjamin Yoder, here today to talk to you about video games. We got a busy episode this week. Hey, you know what would maybe be helpful? Having a podcast every week to reduce the number of things I talk about every show. But we're not there yet. We're not there yet. I kind of expected that we'd have some hefty episodes. So we're going to be talking about two games I played, two Wii games. One's an RPG, one's an on-rail shooter. We'll be talking about that in their full capacity. So look forward to that. I haven't actually wrote down my notes for the RPG section. I'm probably going to take a break halfway through this show and then write my notes down and then convey what I want to convey. I'm a little worried about writing notes about the first game and then trying to also write notes for the second game and then remembering what I was trying to say. So we're going to talk about those, one at the beginning, one at the end. We also got some news story updates to some stories we've been following, mobile game shutdowns, sales and revenues data that I was looking at that was kind of interesting. Level 5 had their event. I don't have a lot to say about a lot of their stuff, but I'll comment on the few things that I do have something to say about. And then also, there's some surprise crossovers that were pretty silly and fun that I wanted to kind of highlight. I think that's kind of it, though, in terms of like the it's a lot, but in terms of like news story categories, I think that's kind of in line with everything I want to talk about. Just a couple of small updates, though, before we get started. Just wanted to kind of talk about last week's show a little bit, where I talked a little bit about kind of my frustration talking about this idea that like I get frustrated when people ask me about like why I play the games I play and then suggest that I'm playing the wrong games, basically. It's not to say that they like, I guess I had a few people reach out to me, and I wanted to convey, in case you didn't reach out to me and I didn't get the chance to clarify this, it's not an issue with somebody asking me this question per se. It's the issue of I don't know how to communicate back about that question. Something about what I'm saying about it is not coming across properly. And that is the frustrating thing more than anything else. So I'm not frustrated with you. I'm more frustrated of my inability to convey to you what I'm doing, because in my heart, I'm doing what I want to be doing, right? But in my mouth, displaying that heart, in my mouth, displaying that heart, that's a sentence. It is difficult for me to do that. So just wanted to say that real quick. But quick little update to video stuff, because it's been a little bit, and you know, I don't want to go into too much detail. The Ko-fi is really where I'm posting about this stuff now, if you want some deep detail on like what's going on with videos. But the Somabringer video is coming along. It actually is in the video editing phase. The script was finalized, did the audio recording. The video is structured out. The big thing is just throwing the video, the actual gameplay, on top of the audio at this point. I will say, as much as I try to make my Xeno videos accessible, I know sometimes they aren't always accessible. This one's in a really weird spot. I don't really know what to say about if it's accessible or not. I may just have to say, hey, check it out if you're interested, and I'll just trust that it's hopefully accessible enough. I had to do a lot of kind of soul searching with that video. In a lot of ways, it is a video written for me by me. So, you know, hopefully it's interesting if you're not interested in Xeno. And then hopefully it's not rude if you are interested in Xeno. But I've gotten a lot of I've done a lot of cleanup on that video, and I think it is a healthy video overall, generally. So speaking of something that was kind of, I don't know if it's healthy or not, but I did want to kind of bring this up because I kind of feel bad about it. I've been playing Final Fantasy XI on and off, and you know, I've been doing EXP parties and stuff, and I feel a little guilty, and I'm just going to convey this with you guys because I want to confide with you. I think I bullied someone out of a party. If you don't know, 6 people party in Final Fantasy XI, and since I'm playing on the rollback servers, that's really required to be in a party with people after a certain point. And everyone in the party kind of needs to pull their weight, right? It's just the difficult thing about Final Fantasy XI. You kind of need to do what you need to do. And it's okay, I think, in my eyes, to be bad at the video game and not do a good job, right? That's okay. But I had somebody who was just like AFK, and I needed them to do stuff. And I was trying to convey to them like, hey, I need you to support heal because I'm playing a mage right now. And it's a whole thing. And I was like trying to say, I need you to support heal. Didn't really get a response. And then told them again, hey, it would be really good if you helped support heal. And they're just like, no, I'm just going to stand here and do nothing, basically. It was just like, and then eventually I somebody died because of them, and I was just like, I really just need you to support heal, and they just logged out of the party after that. So I feel a little bad, but I mean, that is part of it. Like in Final Fantasy XI, you do have to kind of pull your weight to some extent. I wouldn't mind if they were actually trying. We had another person in the party who was maybe not the best at their job, but they were trying to do something, and like I didn't have any complaints about them because ultimately they were playing the video game and having a good time and doing what they wanted to do and contributing versus the other person who was just standing there doing nothing. So anyways, I wanted to confide that with you guys because I feel bad about it. But, you know, life moves on. Everyone's on the same server, so maybe I'll see them again. Maybe I'll do with that someday, but not today. Anyways, this is my Final Fantasy XI update. Let's talk about not Final Fantasy XI, because I know all of you guys are big Final Fantasy XI fans, and you already know everything there is to know about Final Fantasy XI. Transformers Cybertron Adventures. This is a 2010 Wii game that I didn't really pick up out of nowhere. It was a game that I kind of intentionally chose because Next Level Games worked on it, which if you don't know, they're more known today for Luigi's Mansion, working on that series, and Mario Strikers Charged or whatever it's called. But they worked, like, more relevant to this game, they worked on Ghost Recon to the Nintendo Wii, which was like an on-rails, kind of slower-paced on-rails shooter with co-op elements, stealth segments, and things like that. And so I was really curious to see what they could do again with a different IP, because this game is also kind of like an online rail shooter thing. I think there are co-op elements, but I only played this one single player kind of thing. But what I found was that this is like a super fast paced and intense game, and it's like super polished overall. I don't know anything about Transformers. This takes place at the fall of Cybertron, which I think is like their home planet. And it's just kind of this intense the face-off between the Autobots and the Decepticons. Again, I don't really know their motivation for what they're doing here, but it is, this game starts like in the heat of the moment. It is like as this place is just like crumbling, basically. And so what is kind of interesting about that setting is that it makes this video game kind of like an intense Halo-style final chapter kind of thing. You know, things are exploding all the time, debris is everywhere, it's super visually flashy, everything is kind of like, you know, this is the last resort for us kind of thing. But it's that way from the start of the game all the way to the end, and it's a short game, which we'll get into later. But, you know, visually flashy, great looking Wii game, and it's just really intense in its portrayal of this situation, and I think that's part of what makes this game really cool. So there's two campaigns. There's one where you play as the Autobots, and there's one where you play as the Decepticons. And gameplay-wise, generally, they're pretty similar from at least like a loadout perspective. So, you know, we have sniper rifles, seeking missiles, Gatling guns, a beam gun that can vary depending on the size of the Transformer you're playing. If you're a small one, you'll just shoot like little burst shots. Or if you're a heavy one, you'll do like a charge shot and things like that. And as the Transformer's name implies, they can also transform. And they'll transform into cars and planes. And so while a large part of this game is about, you know, sitting behind cover and doing, you know, on-rail shooting, and sometimes you'll be moving and shooting at the same time as well, another part of this game is driving on a car on like a set track kind of thing, in a very like arcade style racing game kind of way, where everything's like very restricted overall. But you'll also be blowing up debris with like a laser gun on the front of your car, or you have the auto seeking missiles or whatever you can use to target, you know, planes that are flying in and trying to get you and things like that. And then you also can be flying in a plane as well, and so you'll be flying around again all on rails. You don't have free roam of the skies or anything like that, but same kind of idea. You can go around, you can shoot debris in the air, or you can lock on to enemies, and certain enemies have more resistance to the lock-on missiles versus the firing missiles and things like that. Very score-driven game, so, you know, it is kind of up, like, a big thing for you to try to destroy as much as you can. I don't know if there's, like, a combo system. I don't remember that much about it. So it's pretty intense overall, and there's, like, a good amount of variety here in terms of the fast-paced kind of movement situations they have here, where you're on foot in a car flying on a plane kind of like that. I did find the Decepticon side of the campaign to be a little bit more straightforward. It is very just kind of like destroy all Autobots kind of thing. So it is a lot of just flying around, blowing stuff up, which is fun on its own. But then the Autobots have a little bit more of a balance to it. There's like a boss fight in this mode. There's like a stealth mission and then some like defend the position kind of stuff. And while it is all very, again, fast paced and intense, it is nice to have a little bit of variety there in the types of missions you're doing, even if ultimately you're still mostly just blowing up Decepticons, essentially, and stuff like that. The dialogue is really different between the campaigns, I feel like, as well. Like, I feel like the campaigns in general, just like, there's just a different feeling between both of them that I think is kind of surprising given how similar they play to each other. But dialogue is one of the ways that I think they differ probably the most, where you have the Autobots having a very, like, Call of Duty Halo-ish kind of, you know, combat call-outs to each other and things like that, and you know, I think the situation for them is a bit more desperate. I think they're getting pushed off Cybertron or something like that, from my understanding, and so it is more about, like, here's our last stand, we have to protect this convoy and stuff, and, you know, it's nothing deep or anything like that. It is very much, you know, things you would hear in a Call of Duty game, but I think it, like, paints a good tone for the type of game this is, with the exception of Bumblebee. He's like a little yellow car or whatever, and he has a bit more of that kind of cartoony, spunky dialogue kind of thing versus, like, you know, Optimus Prime being like, we have to bond together, Autobots, or something like that, right? The Decepticons have a bit more of a, I'd say, less enjoyable dialogue overall, because it is, I mean, I guess it depends on how you're looking at it, right? So if you are coming in here expecting kind of kids cartoon, silly fun dialogue, Decepticons definitely fit in that role. There's a lot of, like, in faction bickering and stuff like that, and character being like, I'll rule the Decepticons one day, and then they, like, make a bunch of dumb mistakes and dumb assumptions, and then everybody just kind of looks at them like, what are you doing? So it's a lot of, like, bickering and kind of, like, aggressive humor and things like that. But overall, like, you know, despite kind of my preference of the Autobots and stuff like that, I think it all is very good dialogue overall. I think the voice acting fits really well. But, you know, it is a super short campaign, so, like, anything you see in this game is not going to stick around very long. So I think having that variety, there's very little time for you to sit there and start nitpicking too many things, generally. You know, it's about an hour and a half each campaign, although there is, like, a score attack mode, so if you do want to try to get some more length out of it, I think there's some cool stuff that you can do with that. But for me, I just want to sit down, have a afternoon game, at least a game like this, you know, super high adrenaline, just quick fun shoot 'em up kind of thing. And if you're a fan of games like Ghost Squad on the Wii, if you've played Keikaishi or something like that, I like Keikaishi a lot. It feels very similar to those, of just, like, very fast paced and very, very quick to get through and just, like, a lot of fun. So while it does feel different than the Ghost Recon game, that they did before, which was, like, a lot longer of a game, a lot of a slower of a game, and maybe a little bit more of a deliberate game, I think it's different in all the right ways, where it is very intense, very fast-paced, and it has variety in the right places. But it doesn't, like, really, it feels like a completely different game from Ghost Recon, even though it has a lot of similar kind of functions underneath, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's even using, like, the same engine or something like that. But, you know, I know zero about Transformers, really, but this is really a game I can't recommend enough. I think it is a great Wii game if you are looking for that kind of thing on the system. So I was really surprised by how much I really liked that game. I just was not expecting that. You know, I buy a lot of games with the expectations that, you know, there's a good chance I'm going to come away from this just kind of mixed at best, right? And that's kind of nice about short games particularly, is that if I come away from it mixed, I can kind of, you know, get through it without too much trouble and just kind of move on with my life. But and I think this game does benefit from being short. But I think that's just really cool that it came out the way it did, and I think it is a really cool game overall. So before we get into the news story, we're going to get into Jillian's Corner. We had, I don't know what I said last week or what, but apparently the magic keys were unlocked for people to start donating all of a sudden. So again, thank you to Jillian for your monthly donation, Jillian. We got a donation from Fireweed, returning donator, so thank you, Fireweed. Megamint, that's new. Megamint gave me, like, a really nice comment as well, which is, like, very, very nice. It's one of those things that, like, sometimes I don't know if the way I'm conveying things is conveying what I want to convey, if that makes sense. But when like, basically, like, they said back to me what I hope I say to people, and I'm like, awesome, cool. I don't know which videos you watched, but apparently it worked out. So I did really appreciate that. Very, very, like, thoughtful comment on that. And then also Demodori. Sorry, Demodori, I delayed you a little bit there. Demodori also donated. So thank you, all of you. You know, Fireweed asked a little bit about this. Of just like, what's the... No, he asked me about the Discord category. Is that what it was? And I think this got me thinking about other things. But, you know, if you do donate, I think technically it should register you in the Discord as the PenPen donator, which is the donation role that we have in there. But there's really not that many other rewards. I did notice that the monthly donation still promised, like, early access videos. So maybe I need to deliver on that. Maybe I'll post some Somabringer stuff up there and keep it private or whatever for people who donated. But if you do have anything that you would be interested in, let me know. The biggest trouble I had, though, if you guys are new, is that when I previously accepted money for Patreon, the problem was is that anytime I promised content, it got in the way of me doing the main content. So it would be long periods of time where I didn't do main content, and I was spending a lot of time working on little things here and there. So if there is something that you think would be pretty quick and easy for me to do, then you can do that. Or you can ask me a question like Fireweed did. Fireweed asked the question, do you have any experience with sports games? Specifically, arcade-style sports games that are not simulation-style. Do you have a favorite? I don't think I've played anything recently. I would need to, like, kind of jumble my brain around a little bit. I have a desire to play sports games, but we'll get into that in a little bit here. But Blitz is kind of the typical one. I think most people my age played Blitz at some point, which is, if you don't know, is like a very arcade style football game with a lot of I don't know what makes Blitz different from simulation games other than maybe less rules, or maybe just like the animations were more intense. I mean, later Blitz were like, hello, we'll give you an x-ray and you'll see all the bones breaking. But I don't really know what the original Blitz had that it's like not football. I guess characters had a turbo meter so they could run faster. And maybe, like, the ball would catch on fire? I don't remember. There's some element to it. It's really interesting. Like, that era of sports games, like, simulation and arcade-style games, were just, like, strangely close to each other, right? And I think that's part of why they had, like, a greater appeal overall, right? Like, people would be more willing to play, like, a Sega Genesis hockey game or something like that because it is easy to pick up and easy to play versus I don't know, maybe Madden is just as easy to pick up and play now, but the impression I have gotten is that Madden has been more and more about the hardcore football fan, not so much little Billy gets a video game and it's football. Admittedly, I think some of that is also you get gifted a game, and guess what, if you got a football game for Christmas, hey buddy, that's the one video you're going to get for the next 6 months, so you better enjoy football, whether you like it or not. So, I've also played International Soccer. That's a game I got as a gift and played because whether I like it or not. Blitzball, everyone's favorite. I did that thing in Blitzball where you played way too long to break the game at the beginning to win the first match you're not supposed to win, and the only difference is that, like, Waka has, like, a trophy in his walking animation or something like that. So, very exciting. I'm glad I wasted a ton of time trying to do that. My goal, I think, for sports games going forward is mostly maybe, like, strategy-based sports games. You know, like, Ice Shield 21 seems to be more, hands-off. Inazuma 11, actually, talk about that's gonna come up later a little bit. I think there's like some interest in that. Maybe I skipped over that because I don't think they said anything new. Maybe I don't know. We'll find out when we get to that section. You know, those kind of like Japanese style sports games. I mean, it's the common trope of me of just like the Japanese ones. I want to play those. but you know, I think the genre is interesting. It's just one I haven't really put a lot of time into, right? And I would love to. I would love to play a Madden All Play game. I'd love to play more golf games. I wonder if I have a Tiger Woods golf game on the Wii. I don't think I do. There's a couple moments where I was looking at some Xbox games and I was like, I don't remember if I have this game or not, which is a sad thing, a sad day for me. If I say I don't know if I have this game or not, that means maybe I shouldn't have bought that game in the first place because I can't remember the moment I picked it up. So yeah. But anyways, thank you guys again, Jillian, Fireweed, Megamint, and Demodori for your contributions. I really appreciate it. Hopefully I'll be getting a video out here maybe before the end of the year. I don't know. I don't want to promise anything. But like I said, it's kind of an inaccessible video in a lot of ways. So I really worry I'm going to put it out and nobody will care. But it's a video that only I could write, maybe. I don't know. Hopefully that's meaningful in some ways. Let's get into the news. I want to talk about a Jujutsu Kaisen game. Have we talked about Jujutsu Kaisen before? This is an anime. I've never watched it. There's a guy with like a bandana over his eyes. There's like a meme that I thought was kind of funny with it, with like a guy in an airport. It's kind of cruel, actually. It's like a guy covering a police officer's face with his mask. But it did make me laugh a little bit, but it was cruel. I was a little sad at the same time. That's about the extent. Oh, and the other thing is that there's another Jujutsu Kaisen game, which is an arena fighter. Thank you, Bandai Namco. But yeah, this one actually has my interest. Why? Because it's a typing game. it largely uses a lot of the visual effects that I think are from the show. So it's a lot of 2D animation and things like that. And like some of the other typing games I've seen, it uses like Romaji characters, so characters in English, right? And so it teaches you how to type, because if you don't know, when you type in Japanese, you don't type Japanese characters per se, right? Like when you want to type ki or something like that, there's not a button that says ki on it, or at least as far as I'm aware, you literally type in ki, K-I, right? And then you basically press a button and there's multiple characters for ki, depending on what you're using it for. And then that will, populate a letter there. And I'm going to guess probably auto-populates based off the word as well. It's like, oh, you typed this word in. Here you go. Here's the word in Japanese characters or whatever, you know, katakana, hiragana, whatever. So yeah, I think Joseph had, I talked to Joseph in the Discord channel. Do you know we have a Discord channel? I probably don't mention it enough maybe, but we have a Discord channel. If you want to join it, you can just go to onechillboard.com. There's a tab at the top that says Discord, and then you'll be taken to a page that you can choose between either the One Control Port Discord or the PCFX Discord, something I did because people kept trying to join the PCFX Discord and ended up in my Discord instead. I have sometimes worried that sometimes donations for the Ko-fi come through for the PCFX Discord but end up in my Ko-fi, but it hasn't been as much of an issue as far as I can tell, so let me know if you need me to transfer the funds over ever. If you meant to donate to the PCFX one instead, and me and Filler can figure out what to do with those funds. But anyways, Joseph was in the Discord and he mentioned that like a lot of these typing games seem like they're for kids and stuff. Like there's a Pokemon typing game as well, a long time ago for the DS that I really wanted to try as well. But the same deal there is like Romaji characters. I don't know how like House of the, or Typing of the Dead handles that. I do have a DS game that is like, I think a variety game, but the core concept is teaching you kanji from Konami, and that has kind of like an on-rail shooter mode as well. But how you do the kanji is you write out the kanji in I think it's called furigana when you use characters. So there's hiragana and katakana, which is like how you actually pronounce a word, and then there's kanji, which is like the actual word. I don't want to get into it too much, but you have to write in the hiragana and katakana in there. So that is how that works. Why am I talking about this? Oh, that's because it does not use Romaji characters, so maybe aimed at an older audience. I don't know. It's kind of like an Indiana Jones looking guy in like a Western style town, but there's Japanese people there. I have not looked at that game enough. Don't take that as a word, my word as fact about that. But anyways, so that looks pretty cool. Don't know if I'll play it, but I would be happy to play it if it happened. Rico Company is the company who's making it. Maybe that's the URL at least. So yeah, Ever Crisis Final Fantasy VII. I forgot about this. It's launching on PC December 7th. This is the Final Fantasy VII mobile game featuring characters from The First Soldier, my favorite Final Fantasy VII game. I guess I did not know that was a statement that I would ever speak, but that is a statement that just came out of my mouth and I agree with it. So I guess ranking of Final Fantasy VII games, First Soldier is my favorite right now. So I guess it has overtaken Dirge of Cerberus. I think if I could play Dirge of Cerberus's multiplayer mode, still, that might have changed, but well, that's now my favorite Final Fantasy VII game. Welcome. That was not planned, but that's where we ended up today. anyways, so this is coming to PC. I think it's on Steam is where it's going to come. So December 7th, I might check it out there. I'm a little hesitant because I am still playing Final Fantasy XI, and that takes a lot of time. Obviously, Ever Crisis will probably be smaller amounts of time. But depending on the mobile game, sometimes it can take a lot of time. So I found myself having trouble spending little amounts of time in Snowbreak Containment Zone at times. Although I found out later that there's like auto battling stuff. And so that's how you like farm materials, which I wasn't really doing that. I was just going and shooting things. Admittedly, the thing I wanted to do in Snowbreak Containment Zone was shoot things, not grind characters. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll check it out. The Google Translate highlighted the feature comfortable keyboard options. So looking forward to playing that game with a comfortable keyboard option. There's a new Switch game announced by D3, which I was not aware. Apparently D3 is owned by Bandai Namco, also conveyed to me in the Discord channel from Kampa. I did not know Bandai Namco owned D3. Apparently they bought like a 95% of their stock back in like 2009. This is an interesting looking game. I'm using machine translation for this name and this whole article, so please do not, you know, take this as fact. But they have this game, maybe a visual novel is the better way to put it. Sound novel is the actual genre listed that they have here. But, you know, Japanese visual novel, sound novel, all that stuff doesn't really line up to Western expectations for that stuff. But essentially, I think the name translates to like unexpected ending in 5 minutes, monochrome library. And what this seems to be, and so, again, sorry, I'm a little confused by what this is, but it seems to be a game where you are in a library with an angel and a devil. And they're the librarians. They're cute anime boys. They're kind of twins looking things. And there is, I believe, a story around this library. But what's in the library, what you do is you read stories in the library, and there's I think like 100 short stories with illustrations, and the stories I think come from a company called Gakken, and I think aesthetically this game is built off the same art for that as well. So I guess in some ways you could say it's a licensed book by them, but it seems to be short stories with unexpected endings, and they also end in 5 minutes. And in saying that, I'm wondering, because like this article does not translate very well. I'm wondering if it's 100 stories total or 100 new stories that they are putting in here, and some of them are old stories from the ones they put out before. It seems like they put out a collection of books and things like that. But each story is categorized in like a different emotion and things like that. So they kind of like, you know, have a little like spin wheel that they have, and I don't know if you like choose based off that or whatever. And the URLs here says like GoFungo. Which I don't know what that means, but that might be the better way to look it up, is GoFungo on D3's website or something like that. There'll be links in the what's I called as well. But yeah, it just kind of looks interesting. It has a neat aesthetic to it. I thought the concept was kind of neat. You know, there's that Nintendo DS game that's like, hey, you want to read some books? No ESRB rating, because we don't need books ESRB ratings. Those do not have ESRB ratings on them. But you can read books on your Nintendo DS. Reminds me a little bit of that, but gamifying it a little bit with these like two angel and demon librarians who apparently have some story in there as well. So I do not think this will get translated. So best of luck to all of you who know Japanese if you are interested. Speaking of Japan, when do we not speak about Japan on this show? Speaking of Japan, game sales. There were some interesting things that came and popped up recently. One of these were Japanese software sales for the last week. I hadn't really been keeping track of these lately, but I just wanted to kind of note that Momotaro Densetsu World, this is the board game that Konami puts out, very popular. And like, once you know about Momotaro Densetsu and like the popularity of it as a board game for the Switch and things like that, you will never unsee it from like Nintendo Japanese specific materials that are like, hey, third parties do great on our system. Momotaro Densetsu does amazing on our system, but they never bring it over. So, but that sold 400K in Japan alone. So that is, I think a little under a third of what Super Mario Brothers Wonder sold, and then also more than what Super Mario RPG sold. However, I don't know how long they have been on the market between the two of them, but very popular series. I just thought it was kind of neat that it is yet again on the top of that chart. I would love to check it out. I think there is a HoloLive stream where they played it once, and if you want to learn about that game, I'm going to guess that will be one of the few English language options for that. I don't know. Maybe there's a whole scene of Momotaro Densetsu fans who are savage. I don't know what I'm saying. Anyways, I just thought that was kind of neat. Also, hardware sales were kind of interesting to look at as well, because something I never realized before is that the PlayStation 5 Digital Edition, I don't know if it is a supply issue or if it is a choice by the Japanese consumer. And you know, one thing I would have maybe have done if I thought about this a little bit further out was trying to see, you know, how a disc edition versus a digital edition compares to Western countries and things like that. But in total, the PlayStation 5 has sold a little under 5 million units, which in context, the Switch has sold about 30 million units. But the digital makes up about 600K of those 5 million units, which just seems small to me. But Japan has like a weird thing where like they don't have a lot of space, right? And I feel like there's this like this weird thing where like they don't have space to keep things. But also, they go physical for a lot of things as well. And so when you go to Japan, there's like a bunch of very like dense physical stores that sell goods. And so it's like, oh, here's a DVD store. And like people are still buying and selling DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff like that. Right. Which just doesn't really exist much here in the US anymore. Right. But yeah, it's just kind of interesting to see that kind of like physical hold there. But I do want to caveat that again with, I don't know the rate of physical or disc to digital consoles in other regions. So maybe that is just the PS5 trend, but it just kind of caught me off guard. Just kind of a little weird. So yeah. Level 5 event happened. If you don't know who Level 5 is, these guys were around mostly through like the DS and 3DS era. Then they kind of fell off and probably around 2018, put out a couple games at the end of that period, like what was that game? Snack World, which I think had like no promotion behind it in the West. And then they were like, Yo-Kai Watch 4 is coming, guys. Maybe not, actually. And they kind of went quiet after Yo-Kai Watch 4, with the exception of mobile games. They have always had successful Yo-Kai Watch games in Japan. And actually, part of this presentation at one point, they're like, hey, guys, just so you know, Yo-Kai Watch mobile games, still doing great. We hope you join us today and start up this game as well. but yeah, in the last like year or so, they've been like, we are dumping video games out the window. And we're going to try to do a big push and try to come back because Yo-Kai Watch was huge in Japan. I'm guessing they're sitting on a lot of Yo-Kai Watch money. Let's not get into the Ni no Kuni NFT game. I don't know if I've even talked about that on this show, but it's okay. We don't need to talk about any more NFT stuff. But yeah, they showed off Mega Ten Musashi Wired, which if you don't know, Mega Ten Musashi actually came out, I think, on Switch and PS4 previously in Japan as a physical game. Then I think it got a free-to-play version. I never knew this, but I think in the presentation they said something along like the single-player and the multiplayer versions in the past. So maybe the single-player was the paid and the multiplayer was the free-to-play or something like that. But this worldwide release seems to be going for about $50. So, you know, it isn't something that's going to be free to play as far as I can tell. But it has cross play across all platforms. And I think that is most major platforms. I don't think Xbox is on that list. But I think PC, PlayStation, and Switch were all on that list. And it's come out April 25th. But yeah. And which I guess one thing to note as well through this whole presentation is that basically everything has been delayed to 2024. So they kind of noted that. They're like, hey guys, we really apologize. Everything is delayed. But, you know, hopefully that means better video games. Fantasy Life I was there as well, which is Switch only. I have the word summy here. I'm going to guess that means summer. It's a summer worldwide release next year. Don't know anything about it really beyond just kind of like what I skimmed through in the presentation, but it looks pretty similar to the past games. There are a lot of like minor enhancements and they spent a lot of time being like, look at the 3DS version. Now look at the Switch version. And, you know, that's fine, but you're not going to really sell me on your game any further. Admittedly, I've always been interested in checking out Fantasy Life. I just never really found the time. Problem with games like Fantasy Life and Snack World, Treasurers. That's where I get the Treasurers from, is Snack World is called Treasurers rather than Dragon Quest Treasures, right? Those games are for me probably more multiplayer games, and nobody in my multiplayer group wants to play Switch video games. So Switch games are basically off limits. And we are actually wrapping up our PS Plus as well, so we're gonna be pretty much PC exclusive going forward for now. But there is opportunity that I might get to play more Final Fantasy XV Comrades, which is a game that I've already played through twice, but I want to get to the end game content still. So, anyways, we're not talking about Final Fantasy XV Comrades, the best Final Fantasy XV game, no. You know, they just, you know, seem like a pretty cleaned up version. So Switch, PS, and mobile, no PC version, unfortunately. And I believe it was also cross-play. There's going to be a beta test, but it's Switch only, I believe. Oh, no, sorry, I started pulling up Inazuma notes. This is Fantasy Life I, Switch only, no beta test. I'm so sorry. I got ahead of myself. I think that's pretty much all I want to say about Fantasy Life I. Inazuma 11, we already talked about this one. This is on Switch, PS, and mobile. There's a beta test on Switch in March. It is a global beta test, so they are releasing this game in English, which I think most Inazuma games had previously got released in English, but I think some of them only got released in Europe, if I remember correctly, due to the American indifference of the sport called football in those other regions. The overworld in this game looks really nice. I think visually it's a really nice looking game, but the actual soccer field itself is a little plain, but it's fine. And again, this kind of goes back to the sports games earlier. It's more like a strategy sports game. It's not something that's like you're playing in real time. It reminds me a lot of that other anime sports game that, or soccer game that came out a while ago, Captain Tsubasa kind of thing. I haven't played the other Inazuma 11 games. I don't know if this game is just like those or different or what, but I would be willing to play it, but I don't necessarily think it's going to happen. I've just kind of packed on games right now, and even the games that I was trying to play when they came out, like Dragon Quest Treasures, I have not done still. So I am kind of in a no new games moment, I think, until I get past some things that I've been really wanting to do for a while now. Unless Monolith Soft like stealth drops a game, then obviously I'll make time for that. They mentioned there's like a Yo-Kai Watch game that might be coming. There's like an event in April that they're going to talk more. So, you know, Yo-Kai Watch is a huge franchise for them in Japan. Maybe not as it doesn't have like the power in the US, but you know, if they make a good game and enough people catch on to it here, I think there's an audience for it probably. But we'll see. I think that's kind of the big thing with Level 5. It's like a lot of these are old video games. What's it called? There's a Professor Layton gameplay show. I don't have any thoughts on that. There's also the Deca Police thing. That's probably the most unique thing. That's the new IP that they did. That was like previously a Professor Layton game. And then they're like, let's give Professor Layton a gun. And they're like, actually, maybe not a Professor Layton game. Let's make him a cat man with a gun. but yeah, it is a lot of old IP. And, you know, I think Professor Layton has clout in the US here, right? But Fantasy Life, Inazuma, Megaton Musashi, you know, all these are games. Yo-Kai Watch, even, are games that are going to, you know, have to find an audience still, right? And I am not sure if they'll be able to do that. But, you know, it seems like they have a lot of money right now. I don't know their actual financials, but it seems like they are really trying to make this push to bring them back as a major player in the gaming industry, right? Because they haven't been for, you know, a while, in the U.S. at least. Yeah, mostly mobile games in Japan is where they've been at, so... This isn't really a news story, but I thought it was kind of interesting. We talked a while ago about Final Fantasy XI and how basically the game is kind of in a hibernation mode yet again. They said they were going to do this before, and they kind of went back on their word about it. So that's not to say we are in a full hibernation mode, but this seems like the more likely hibernation mode that might be until the game shuts down. No word on that, but just, you know, just want to set the stage here. I was looking at somebody on Twitter. I won't say who it is, but it was a Japanese Final Fantasy XI player. And I thought it was interesting. They had like a screenshot from when they first started their character in 2003, it looks like, where they're playing their Mithra. And then they have a screenshot of from a while ago or whatever. But they basically had a quick little tweet thread where they're like, hey, I kind of finished the end game content for Final Fantasy XI. I guess I'm kind of done. And it's kind of over. So it was just kind of interesting to see that kind of like displayed. I mean, like to some extent, I think there was always the feeling with me when I finished Final Fantasy XI being like, you know, oh, I finished Rhapsodies of Vanadil. You know, that's going to be the end of that game. It's the wrap up. You kind of have that closure a little bit, right? But, you know, there's still a lot more Final Fantasy XI to play at that point. And I'm going to guess this person, I don't know them. I'm going to guess they still have more they could do in the game, right? But I think when you start getting to the point that, like, you know, you have a maxed out character and there's no new content otherwise for that maxed out character, that is probably when that game starts to slow down anymore. So, again, Japanese person, machine translated article or a tweet thread here. But I thought it was just, like, interesting that from a content perspective, they had that same feeling, I guess, to some extent, where I kind of had that feeling with the Final Fantasy XI from a story perspective until they were like, we're making more story. And I have to go back and do that on my own at some point here, but I'm on a different Final Fantasy XI journey right now that will hopefully wrap up in a reasonable time frame. I would like to play Final Fantasy XI on the servers and get that story done as well, but I do worry it's going to take a while, and I don't know if it'll be in my stomach to do a lot of stuff on the main servers, honestly, at this point. Like, it's just so hard for me to get back in because there's just so much going on those servers, and, like, I never know what's happening, so... Fun crossover news. Chase Chase Jokers. Hit video game Konami. for the arcade. I'm curious how the game's doing. It seems like it's keep getting updates and things like that. If you don't know, it has shares some blood with Bomber Girl, which is also a long running live service kind of arcade game. Most Japanese arcade games are live service now. So that's not anything like special or unique about it. Chase Chase Jokers also being that. Really enjoyed that game, though. I was really glad I sat down and played a lot of Chase Chase Jokers in Japan, because I was originally planning to play Dragon Quest, not Infinity Strash, Crossblades, and that game was way too massive for me to spend a lot of time on, and I think I realized that game has way more content than I will ever get to. Where Chase Chase Jokers, I can at least, you know, there's a grind up period where you have to like get it so you can actually play with other players, which is something that really bothers me with live service games that do that, where like you're gonna play against bots until you feel good enough about yourself, and then we'll let people beat you down. I'm just like, no, just let people beat me down. I want to play against real people, please. Anyways. The character, I think her name is Chiemo or something like that. She's like a Gyaru, Yandere, maybe has like some self-harm vibes to her or whatever. I forget if she has like band-aids on her and things like that, but, she is being added to Bomber Girl. Which, if you don't know, Bomber Girl character has been added to Chase Chase Jokers before. So we're finally getting the reverse going back. It's interesting because she is not the main character from the game. So I wonder if it's one of those cases where like Bomber Girl has Pine, and Pine is like the Bomber Girl, even though Bomber Girl is the Bomber Girl. so Pine is the character, and Pine shows up in all the Bomber Girl related media now, including what was it called, Mahjong Fight Club or something like that. The latest one of that I think has a Pine in there as well. So yeah, I'm curious if the Chiemo is more popular than the main girl from Chase Chase Jokers. I don't know her name, but be kind of curious. But yeah, she's coming over to there. That's pretty cool. Samba de Amigo is getting an outfit for Love and Berry, although it is just Love's outfit, I believe, which looks a little silly. It's a monkey in Love's clothes. If you don't know, Love is the teenage girl that has the brown hair, and like I think she has like a pink shirt and jeans on, something like that. So Samba de Amigo is dressing up as her, or what is his name? I don't know the monkey's name. And they're also adding in the song ABC. If you don't know that song, it's like A B C D bum 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 bum. I need to play Love and Berry at some point. That's like the one song I can remember. Also, Daddy is, what's the song like, Daddy's Angry or something like that? Just like, oh, there's like a song where she's talking about daddy getting angry and being upset and her not wanting daddy to be angry. It's a weird song. Anyways, whatever. There's probably a clip in like an old episode when I was talking about Love and Berry, honestly. So yeah, that's being added. Still not enough to get me to buy Samba de Amigo, the latest one, but I think that game looks really cool. The biggest problem with Samba de Amigo is I just played the Wii one and I'm good. I don't know if I need another Samba de Amigo game. I think that my feeling is that the Wiimote did a pretty good job of replicating the nunchuck, or the maracas, you know, for a home console main controller that's not a specialty controller, right? Wii remotes did a great job. I don't know if Joy-Cons can really do much more other than just be more accurate, right? Which I know some people who think Samba de Amigo on the Wii has really accurate controls, right? So I think there is space where that is like a subjective feeling on how accurate those controls are or not. But I don't know, maybe someday, but I don't think it's anything new. I don't know how it did either, but I'm glad Sega brought it back. Hopefully it's doing well. Who can say? Speaking of games that aren't doing well, or maybe at least past their prime of doing well, live games, they're dying. There's a few of them that have been killed recently. I can't remember if we talked about any of these already. I don't think we did. I feel like I might have skipped these, but World Flipper. This is the pinball RPG game where you play little anime characters on a pinball table kind of thing. That's shutting down February 2024. That is celebrating, I think it's a Cygames joint as well. Celebrating its fourth anniversary. So what they're doing is they're basically giving you like 10 free pulls a day, as far as I can tell. And I think you can do up to, I think it's like 250 if you keep playing every day until then or something like that. I don't know how that works. Don't ask me about math. Maybe it's just 250 total. But yeah, so they're doing that. They're also selling a soundtrack as well now for all you gamers who will miss the World Flipper soundtrack. Dissidia, Final Fantasy Opera Omnia. This is the crossover Final Fantasy mobile game, which admittedly a lot of them, most of them are this, but this is one of the ones that was actually successful, and it actually had quite a bit of Final Fantasy XI content in it. There's a guy who's, I think he runs the Final Fantasy XI wiki or something, or maybe it's just a Twitter account that's about Final Fantasy XI or something like that, but he's been playing this game pretty religiously. I think I saw him mention that they're going to upload the videos to YouTube. I don't know if he was talking about Square Enix or like the wiki they're going to upload those videos to YouTube or something like that. But it sounds like there will be some preservation of those cutscenes and things like that. Don't know if they added any new story to that stuff at all. I'm going to guess there's probably little tidbits here. And at the very least, you get like, you know, a little fun interactions between your favorite Final Fantasy characters. But not anymore. Come February, your favorite Final Fantasy characters will die. You will never see them again. Until the next mobile game where they are brought back. Although I think a lot of Final Fantasy XI characters might not come back, honestly. Like, I think Aldo is in that game, and like, boy, I would love for Aldo to be in anything Final Fantasy beyond Final Fantasy XI and Final Fantasy XI Opera Omnia. But Aldo is not loved, and so he will disappear into nothingness. So yeah. And the last game here I wanted to know, and again, this might be one we talked about, but yeah, I figured just to cover my bases. I forget sometimes with these mobile games. A lot of these mobile games, I just, like, forget if we talked about them or not. 404 game, Reset is shutting down. That is the Sega kind of on-rail shooter mobile game, but, like, all the characters are based off, like, Sega IP. So it's like, hey, this character is Virtua Fighter or something like that. I don't remember. But this character is Outrun or something like that. I heard pretty good things about that game, actually, but it seemed like a very niche game, and I think also Yoko Taro was involved with it as well, but I don't necessarily know. I don't know. Like, apparently it was too niche for that space, but, you know, it definitely seemed like the concept didn't necessarily seem super, super marketable, but I don't know. Whatevs. They're selling a soundtrack for it as well. As it's shutting down, get that money before your game is dead. From the people who want to buy it. I don't know what happened to that Magicka. What was it called? Magician? There's like some mobile game that was shutting down at some point. That fortunately, the community was able to like fund them to make an offline mode, which was pretty cool. I liked that they did that. I thought that was a nice way to do that. So yeah. The last news story here is we get into Arkrai's Fantasia, although I got to take a stop for a moment and take some notes here, and then we'll all record again. Bloob Archive is the third most earning revenue game for October. Why is this a news story? Only because I did not realize Bloob Archive was doing so well in Japan. It was behind Umamusume and Nikkei. But slightly above Heavens Burn Red and Memento Mori, which I only found out about this game last week or so, and I think it's been around for a little while, could be wrong, but that game has a super flashy art style. Now, it is a mobile RPG through and through as far as I can tell, which is not, maybe that's degrading to say it that way, but I think a lot of times you look at mobile RPGs and it's hard to tell where their depth comes from. They look like idle games, you know, I imagine how they work is you build a team and they have skills and you just kind of tell them to do their thing. And I hope you built a team right? And then maybe there's like a button you can press. That is my impression of most mobile RPGs. Not saying that's always true. And sometimes I think it's not always that is the main primary gameplay method from like here's the strategy element of it, right? But they become that because they're like, hey, we know you're kind of done and you just want to grind. We'll just let you auto battle and fast forward. Which, admittedly, a lot of RPGs do that now too. I never make use of that stuff, really. Speaking of which, Arkrai's Fantasia also did not make use of that stuff. I thought it was interesting. Bloob Archive is a game I literally know nothing about. And I'm going to guess if I look up a YouTube video of it, I will absolutely 100% know what it will look like before I pull it up. But I just was surprised it was doing so well. Mostly know of it through Korean memes. There's a bunch of like Korean little chibi meme things. There's like one with like one of the girls playing a fighting game and then she like dances on another character's body. And then that little like dancing character I have seen pasted around on many videos. Also StarCraft memes with Bloob Archive. So characters mimicking StarCraft characters and killing them. I don't know. Like, honestly, out of all the things in my YouTube algorithm, this is one of the things that I'm like, yeah, sure, absolutely, just give these to me. I will click them, and and it's fine. There's a lot of things in my YouTube algorithm I don't really want anymore, but YouTube is like, yes, you will continue to receive these. Blue Archive, one of those things. I will never play Blue Archive. I don't know if I will ever look up gameplay for Blue Archive. I don't know if I care to look up gameplay for Blue Archive. But it was interesting to see that ranked so high. And I always think the top list of games on mobile revenue and things like that, always eye-catching for me. So, especially Japan, because we don't really have access to people who are regularly playing those games, right? Like, I'm like, oh, my mom's playing Candy Crush, right? That's easy enough. But, like, I don't know that Japanese mom. Is she playing Uma Musume? Stats show yes. Anyways. yeah, I'm going to talk about Arkwright's Fantasia. First, pausing this podcast, though. All right, notes were written. I'm back. There is a lot of text on this page. It's an RPG. It's going to be a little bit. So, yeah. But anyways, yeah. Arkwright's Fantasia is a Nintendo Wii game from 2010. And unfortunately, I think it gets sidelined a lot, probably likely due to its localization. And also just, I think, you know, when you compare it to something like a Xenoblade or a Last Story, on the surface, it maybe doesn't look as impressive. And I think, like, presentation-wise, you know, it looks very much like a PS2 or PSP game, despite, you know, I think using the Wii's hardware in very effective ways. But, you know, this is also an era when games that were, you know, considered traditional JRPGs were considered bad. You know, people were not open-minded to games with fixed cameras, zoomed-out overworlds, turn-based combat systems, things like that. And, you know, in some ways, it is very Tales-like, especially in terms of its visual quality in a lot of ways. But it's on the Wii, probably because of the market penetration in some ways. But I also think that's like helps make it stand out. And while I think in a lot of ways, a lot of people might kind of dock it for a lot of different reasons, I really think it is a game that stacks up against games like The Last Story and like Xenoblade. It's just how it stacks up is a little less obvious. And the two things that I think make this game especially special is the combat system and also just really distinct character interactions that have some story gimmicks that affect the gameplay itself at times. Starting with the combat system, it's very dense. It is a turn-based game with a round structure to its turns, basically. So you basically plan out the entire set of skills for your whole party, and then you can confirm. Each skill has a speed, and so depending on which skill it is or the number of actions you've taken that turn already, you know, that skill will be pushed back into a you know, turn-based order that appears at the bottom of the screen that you can also see, like, enemy actions and skills as well. I think I've heard Grandia has, like, a similar system. However, I do recall when I played Final Fantasy X there being some similar mechanics there as well. But what was really stand out about this game, or maybe what makes this game a little bit more distinct, is that there's something that I don't know what it's called in game, but I would call it like skill stacking is kind of like a big part of this game, which basically means that if characters use the same skill or one character use the same skill back to back, it enhances that skill in some way. So if one character uses the attack action four times in a row, four single attacks that happen at different points in the turn order will instead combine down to the first attack, and then it'll be a four-hit combo. That also means that if you have two characters who cast Fire 1, then it makes that spell Fire 2. They all have to be turned, like, when it's with multi-characters, though, it all has to be cast, like, kind of within the same time frame of that turn. You can't have Fire 1 cast at the beginning and the end of the turn and have those combined. But they're also, you know, enhanceable in other ways, though, like these elemental crystals that appear on the field and stuff like that. So where the bottleneck is in this game for its skills and what players can use is the action point system. And these action points are a party-wide set of action points. So every action you do costs a certain number of points, and you can fully mix and match you know, how you want to do this. So if you want characters that don't do anything on a turn, you can let them do nothing. Or you can have an individual character play out an entire turn on their own. It's a really fun system, but I think what's really cool about this in the case of Arkwright's Fantasia is that this is not a player-exclusive system. This is a system that is heavily used by enemies and heavily abused, and especially on bosses. You will find there are times where bosses are really geared up in ways to utilize this system to its fullest. So it's really easy to quickly die because the enemy team is going to throw something at you that you haven't seen before, a combination of skills you haven't thought of before. And it's great for learning new ideas and mechanics that you can apply to future fights and things like that. The game really goes out of its way to challenge you with these ideas and put them in your face and show you how devastating they are directly to you as the player by killing you with them. Which is only bad in the way that save points are kind of haphazardly placed throughout this game. And unfortunately, there's no retry system to battles. So there are frequently times you'll lose like 30 minutes to an hour of progress or entire dungeon. Occasionally as well, because you walked into a fight, you had no idea what they're going to do, and the first turn is just them destroying you immediately, which is extra frustrating since if you don't know how to deal with that tactic, you can't just like quickly try something new. You have to do that entire section again before you try to fight the boss again, and then, you know, hopefully not get destroyed this time. So you have to really like sit down and think about it at the start of a dungeon after you've died and been like, okay, what am I doing when I get there, and what am I prepared to do so when I get into that fight, I can react immediately and survive? Because a lot of fights really are focused on initially surviving in a wave of onslaughts at the start. And then once you've learned to deal with that, you know, managing damage from there as you slowly kind of pick away at a boss and things like that. Every fight really asks you to be as best prepared as possible. And the game is also very stringent about you using every resource available to you. You are going to need to use your items. There's not a lot of item hoarding you can do in this game. Debuffs and buffs are incredibly helpful. You really want to go out of your way to make sure those are applied. It's not like most other JRPGs where those things are going to be resisted by default by the bosses. Every element of the combat system matters, and the game is really not afraid to push you to use those things. I did find I had to grind a lot at times, but ultimately I think that grinding still wasn't like me overpowering the game. It was about giving myself more resources so I could better prepare myself for that battle. And thankfully, you know, that combat system has a really decent, a really good customization system to back it up. So for example, the spell system in the game is pretty free flowing. You can kind of like assign any spell to any character. They're based off these orbs that you put on them. But these orbs are not specific spells as much as they are elements. So these elements, when you put them on the character, determine what spells they can use. And then you can combine different orbs of different elements to create new spells and things like that. Then there's also opposing elements as well. So if you have opposing elements on a character, actually reduce their ability in other elements based off the weaknesses that they apply to them and stuff like that. So it's like a really interesting system where you can go and kind of like customize these orbs and or your characters with these orbs and try to like figure out what you want to do with the character. And because characters, you know, can stack skills onto each other, you know, you don't necessarily want one character to be the wind magic character. You don't necessarily want one character to be the water magic character. You kind of want to mix and match them a lot of the times. It's maybe a little bit more complicated than it should be, though. Like, there's a shop system that you can use to kind of, like, level up how much MP you have within a certain category spell. You can also level up the effectiveness of certain elements and certain spells of certain levels. But there's, like, a limited number of points you can set, and it also costs money as well. So it's really expensive, and it is often easy for you to kind of over-assign certain points to certain areas, but the game lets you kind of reset it. But it's a pretty limited number of resources, and also the number of orbs you have are fairly limited as well. So you don't always have the full capability to configure your party's magic layout, you know, and then the way you want to without really tearing away at the resources you have, kind of thing. So maybe it's a little too complicated at times, but honestly, it was something that I was able to make work and kind of sit with like the same build for most of the second half of the game. Weapons in the game don't really have stats, but they have special effects. So, you know, there is no weapon that's necessarily directly better than another. But there are like a key special effect that's locked to that weapon. So that can be things like increased critical hit rate or like, you know, increased EXP at the end of battle and all that kind of stuff. But there are additional skills that are on that weapon when you first get them, but you have to unlock them from that weapon. So when you level that weapon up, these skills will eventually be removable from that weapon. So you can take a skill from one weapon and move it to another. There's one that's always locked to that weapon, but the other ones are unlockable. And then these scales come off as blocks, and these blocks are different, like Tetris sizes and things like that. And when you level up a weapon, you open up more spaces to equip on that weapon. So you can basically go ahead and start building out new weapons based off how these pieces fit together. And because they all have set pieces and can't be rotated and things like that, there's a lot of thought put into, you know, making sure you can't overload on certain elements without kind of sabotaging your build a little bit. And how that actually plays out is that when a weapon gets max level, there's a special skill associated with it, which is also locked to the weapon. And that special skill only happens if you fill out the entire set of blocks. So you have to fit everything perfectly in. And if you don't do that, you lose that skill. So it's a lot of time-consuming elements with, like, not only grinding weapons to pull off their skills and things like that, but also in customizing them, trying to get the most out of weapons and things like that. It does mean that you'll spend a lot of time in the game kind of running around with bad weapons to try to get their skills, but it is something that I think is a really satisfying system, and when you take it into boss fights especially, you know, you kind of try to use, you know, everything you have to kind of build these best weapon sets that complement your characters and their builds and things like that. So I'd say this combat system is definitely the best thing about this game. Is just, you know, there are some hiccups there with just a lot of time consumption and resource management at times and needing to grind a little bit. But, you know, I think it's really satisfying, and it is something that is really not afraid to challenge you in a way that I think many other RPGs are afraid to challenge you. So if you want something that's a difficult JRPG that requires you to really think about its mechanics, this is a great game for that. Where things are a little bit more antsy, but I think still really worth considering the game for, is when it comes to kind of its storytelling and the character interactions that they have. Because there's, like, some really neat ideas here that, while they sound kind of plain on paper, I think ultimately are implemented in really interesting ways. So like a lot of JRPGs, it is very much a church bad kind of story. Basically, there's two major religions in this world, and there's one religionless city, I think. I think that's how it works out. And they all are kind of at conflict with each other, essentially. You know, and so what the story definitely starts out at is church is bad. Whoops, with the church that we were working with is actually a bad thing. So the game follows, you know, your main party, and you're going through this whole, like, church bad story. But at some point, and I won't get into the details of exactly what happens, but there's a secondary party that shows up. And they are kind of affiliated with the other religion. And they're both, you know, both of you guys are basically trying to save the world, but often in different and conflicting ways. Again, kind of a normal story point overall. But what I think is really neat about how Arkwright's Fantasia handles this is that they kind of treat the second party as a second party in a video game as well. So you have this other party going around the world, and there's times where you're competing for them or with them for resources. So there's, like, a dungeon where you have to race them to the finish, and if you do not get there in time, they get the thing from that dungeon and you do not get it anymore, right? And so you kind of have this, like, conflict with them. Each group has kind of, like, a core cast, but there's also, like, this really interesting dynamic where other characters, kind of like the fringes of your party, have their own objectives. And so sometimes they will group up with your side, and sometimes they'll group up with the other team just based off what they need to do. So it's this constant, like, back and forth as characters kind of, like, swap between parties and things like that. And both teams are really kind of wrestling with, you know, what it means to save the world. And this is also, like, a big part of the story as well, since each side is, you know, on a religious journey. And they're, you know, both kind of conflicted with the faults of their religion, but how each side handles that is different, and they come to different conclusions from it. One element that, you know, helps your journey may be something that is the ending of the world on their side, and the same vice versa. So there's, like, things you're doing to the world that are ultimately hurting the other player's quest a little bit. The execution is a bit rough here. There's a lot of conflict between these two parties, and I would not say they're particularly deep. There's a lot of, I think, questionable dialogue in how that stuff is conveyed. But the template here is very cool, and I think very few characters are treated as objectively good, and I think they do a great job drawing a gray line between everything. Even some of the villains in the game, in some ways, if you look at it at the end, could be kind of viewed as heroes in hindsight, which is kind of interesting. It's a very messy game when it comes to politics, but that's part of the reason why I like it so much. The biggest problem is its localization, and I played it dubbed, which was, it's bad. It's not a good dub. You know, I definitely have a little bit of a soft spot for people who are clearly trying to some extent to do this, but definitely the execution for whatever reason here is just not particularly good. The Japanese undub is available, so if you can patch the game, you know, I would probably recommend it for most people. I really can't say how much of the game is hurt by either the writing or the voice acting, so maybe unpatching or undubbing the game will not help that much. But the voice acting for sure is just kind of flat overall. There's some occasional so bad it's good moments, but not enough I'd recommend it for that. You know, you're going to get a few of those, and you'll probably find most of those on YouTube rather than having, you know, playing a whole 70-hour RPG to get into those. But the big thing is it does damage some of the more serious moments in the game, the more tragic moments. There's definitely moments that you're supposed to feel something for a character, but the voice actor they have just cannot convey it right. So if you want to try a different thing than what I did, go ahead and try the Japanese undub. And I think especially for people who only speak English, you know, at the very least, not knowing that language kind of covers up some of the blemishes you would see in a language that you understand, right? So, but the small things I can say about the English dub that I do think were a positive is that I do think that the main character is pretty good at capturing the main character's indifference at times. The main character is kind of built in a way where he is, I mean, again, not particularly special in this regard, but he is very much like a, I don't care about religion, but I'm on this religious path kind of thing, right? And I think he does a good job of conveying that indifference with that. And then he has a companion who's kind of supposed to be this like sheltered, awkward girl with a lot of like really weird turns of phrases. So she like pulled turns of phrases from people and doesn't know what they mean, but will just use them in random situations. And it's kind of fun. I kind of like it a lot. And it's kind of intended to be awkward and bad at times. And sometimes I think these moments get kind of called bad acting when really the thing is that it's kind of intended to be an awkward moment in a lot of ways. Kind of like the Final Fantasy X laugh, right, with Tidus. But you know, I think saying that some of the voice acting is bad is intentional really can only get you so far, because the rest of the game feels the same way, but without the feeling that they are in on it versus those two characters in certain particular moments. So, especially if you remove the dub, though, I think this is a fantastic game. It definitely is not as grandiose as like Xenoblade Chronicles or The Last Story. But what I think it does is it excels in its own unique ways that just aren't as obvious, with the scenario just being a really distinct kind of scenario that really kind of tries to deliver on a unique setup when it comes to how these characters interact with each other and the fact that they collaborate, but then also are against each other at the same time, I think is kind of a fun thing. And the fact that they're treated like an actual RPG party separate of you. And then also just the intensely deep combat system, you know, aside from some of the downtime you got to spend with like, you know, customizing your stuff, which some people I think will be into. And I was definitely into that to some degree and definitely needed to grind at times for me, myself at least. You know, is a little bit slow, but I think that the combat system's depth is just so extensive that it is really, really worth your time. And the game knows that its combat system is good and will use it in to the fullest extent, I think. So I think that's really awesome. So, you know, if you are a JRPG fan, and especially if you're like, I want to play every JRPG on the Wii, I really think Arkwright's Fantasia is a must-play JRPG on the Wii. Two must-play games on this podcast: Transformers and Arkwright's Fantasia. What a good month for the Nintendo Wii. Whew, words are out of my mouth and ready to close. My mouth's ready to close, not the words. I might try to go get a drink or something. Not alcohol, just like I kind of want a soda, but it's getting late and I need to go do that. So let's wrap up this podcast. Thank you so much for coming. OneShortWord.com is the website. Thank you again, everyone who donated on the Ko-fi. Again, it was kind of a surprise month in terms of donations, so I appreciate that. Jillian, Fireweed, Mega Mint, and Demodori. There's a website. It's called OneShortWord.com. There's not a lot going on right now outside of this podcast, but I'm working on a video. Hopefully it'll come out soon. So check that out when it comes. I'll hopefully maybe post, if I don't post something on Ko-fi before I put the Summer Breaker video out, I'll definitely post a post-mortem thing up on there. I like doing those post-mortems because it gives me a chance to more healthily analyze videos right when I put them out, because a lot of times when I put a video out, I'm like, this is bad. And I'm just like, And sometimes it's better to, I think, just let it be bad and then you know, address it later. And if it seems like other people are noticing it's bad too, then just lesson learned for the next video. Sometimes tearing a video apart, trying to fix one thing is not as easy as you think this late in the process. So I think it's better at times to just let things move forward and get done. You can join the Discord again at onecontroller.com. Click on the Discord section at the top of the page. There's a new category on the thing, by the way, for like other topics. So if you want to check out some other topics, there's a category there. It's just like the research archiving stuff, a link to my gameplay channel, and some other stuff. So anyways, one more thing. I'll probably try to remember to ask this at the beginning of the podcast next time. I am looking for Game of the Year topic suggestions for the end of the year. Please reach out to me if you have some ideas. That does not mean it has to be a game-specific topic. It can be other things, like what is the best character this year? Or something like that, right? You can be a range. You can be, what's the best news story this year, right? Probably not the end of this year. So the next podcast will be a normal podcast, I believe. And then I think January 1st will be that podcast, and that'll be the Game of the Year podcast. So I know a lot of people like to get their Game of the Year stuff out before the year is over, but that's just how it's going to work. So look forward to that, and hopefully it's good, and hopefully all is well. But yeah. Thank you guys again so much for coming, and I hope you guys have a great 2 weeks, and I'll see you guys before Christmas? Right before Christmas, the week before Holy Santa himself visits your home.